And that will be the last of this slide. It's not the first. Well, at least you know how it's going to end. I've actually got notes today. How scary is that? I always stick to my notes. That's why I don't write any. Right. Thank you. So it says, "And to the angel of the church in Philadelphia write, thus says the Holy One, the true One, the one who has the key of David, the one who opens so that no one will shut, and who shuts so that no one opens. I know your works. You see, I have put before you an open door that no one can shut, because you have so little power, and yet you have kept my word and have not denied my name. See, I will make those from the synagogue of Satan who say that they are Jews and are not, but are lying, I will make them come and bow down before your feet, and they will know I have loved you. Because you have kept my word about patient endurance, I will also keep you from the hour of testing that is coming on the whole world, to test those who live on the earth. I am coming soon. Hold fast to what you have, so that no one takes your laurel wreath. Any who conquer, I will make into a pillar in the temple of my God, and they will never leave it. Moreover, I will write on them the name of God and the name of the city of my God, the new Jerusalem that comes down from heaven from my God, and my own new name. Let the one who has an ear listen to what the Spirit says to the churches." To live as if God calls not only the heavens and the earth into being, but calls into being every being there has ever been, and then calls each being to stand where God has placed them and to live faithfully for him where he places them. To live as if all life, and specifically your life and my life, are designed with care, purpose, and deliberation when so much seems random and down to luck or an accident of birth, or just a case of having to deal with the cards you're dealt. To live according to the vision of Paul in Acts 17. The God who made the world and everything in it, being Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in temples made by human hands, nor is served by human hands, as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all humankind life and breath and everything. And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place, that they should seek God and perhaps feel their way toward him and find him. It is actually not far from each one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being. As even some of your own poets have said, for we are indeed his offspring. To live as if Paul's vision and Revelation's vision are profound truths about the ordered and deliberate nature of our being is hard. And it provokes all kinds of opposition, not least in our own soul, when we yearn to be free of the burdens and responsibilities of mature faith, of loving neighbor, of raising families, attending committee meetings, and committing our life's energies so that others may live well. The temptation to uproot and go is profound, even if just to escape that suffocating sense of ennui or boredom that only a little adventure might relieve. The decision to stay and instead put down roots, therefore no less profound. Thus, the power to stay and stand and stay standing comes not from us, but from God. For the people of Philadelphia, they were not feeling powerful. They were feeling the heat, the accusations of the Jews who had become as Satan to them. The accusers of the brethren, which is, of course, what Satan actually means. It's a title rather than a name, the Satan, the accuser. When we accuse brethren, we are allied with the Satan, the accuser. In this little faithful brethren, trying to take a stand for Jesus, we're not feeling powerful, which, of course, Christ knows, because he knows their works, he knows their situation, and he comments on it. Perhaps they were getting weak in the knees and needing some encouragement to hold firm. Perhaps, though, their weakness was not of faith necessarily, but in their position in society as a result of their faith. And we know from other churches and other things that have been explored that faith in Christ can make a person very vulnerable in that day and age in those cities. It can mean loss of job. It can mean loss of possessions. It can mean loss of business. It can mean loss of freedom. If you were jailed, it can even mean loss of life. It was not an easy thing to do, and they were vulnerable. So Christ affirms two key things. The first is that Christ is the way. Thanks for that. I'm going to use that in a minute. Christ is the way. He is the truth and the life. He describes himself in John as the door. A way that he has opened. A way that no one can close. A way that they are going by in their faith in Christ. They have found the door. They're going in the right direction, despite what their accusers might say to them. They've even discovered that Jesus can be worshipped as if they were worshipping Yahweh, as if he were God himself made flesh. And you can imagine, perhaps, how offensive that was to the Jews, and still is in many cases. But it is nevertheless true. And one day, Christ says, he is going to turn the tables. In the Old Testament, Christ spoke to the Jews that he would cause the Gentiles to bow at their feet. He would humble the Gentile nations in front of Israel. And now it seems like God is going to take these Jews and cause them to be humble in front of these Gentiles because they are having, because they've got their faith right. They're rightly aligned. And that must be a difficult thing to swallow. The second thing that he affirms, which I really want to work out a little more broadly this morning, is they are pillars of his community. This weak little gathering of Christ followers are in fact pillars of his community. They are not as weak as they suppose. They are strong. Strong enough to hold up the roof of a vast temple. Strong enough to build with and build on. Not the foundations or the capstone, that would be Christ himself, but vitally important to God's building plans nonetheless. Strong in the right kinds of ways. In the sense that they persist, patiently endure, even under great pressure to buckle. And it's important we recognize that whenever Revelation talks about conquering, it is always with this picture of patient endurance that defines it, that fills the content of that word conquer. It is not a bloody campaign to kill your enemy. It is the ability to hold on faithfully to Christ and patiently endure. Such an important point. Because standing firm under pressure, standing firm where God has placed you, is an underestimated struggle. Stand in one place for any length of time and you discover just how hard that is. Now we talk whimsically, romantically even, about putting down roots in a community. But the whimsy and romance rarely survive a prolonged encounter with reality. Perhaps the symbol of our restless age, thank you to the person I won't name who allowed me to enter into this illustration before I got there, is the one we cannot leave home without, the mobile phone. Are your phones switched to silent? Did someone deliberately leave their phone home? Two people, three, four, always. Yeah, you've come from the Stone Age, though. You still don't know how to use it. That's right. With the mobile phone, we have built this perfect machine, haven't we, that resolves that age-old fear, the fear that no matter where we are and what we are doing and with whom we are doing it, we're probably missing out. That wherever we are, the good life that we all want is likely somewhere else, happening with other people, and we're missing out. But with the mobile phone, no matter where I go, no matter who I'm with, no matter what I'm doing, someone who is enjoying the good life can reach me and save me. This is the promise of the mobile phone. Now, if the fear of missing out, FOMO it's called, if you wanted the colloquial term, FOMO. If you ever hear that? FOMO. You'll know what it means now. Fear of missing out. Names a tormenting spirit of this age, and it will be hard to make a case for staying put because we will naturally resist the idea. If there is a spirit of this age that we are already infected by, then to make a case for staying is going to raise hackles. If we fear that missing out on opportunities is missing out on the good life, how can you make a case for staying put and upholding responsibilities and commitments that will precisely cost you those opportunities and potentially, in our view, cut us off from this good life we're all chasing? If we're going to be like the Philadelphians and receive the encouraging commendation of Christ to hold on despite all the forces seeking to weaken our grip, then I'm going to have to make that case somehow, aren't I? I'm going to have to somehow convince us that staying put, putting down roots, being pillars of a community is crucial. A chap named Thomas Howard in the 60s wrote a book called Chance or the Dance. It was his attempt to make sense of, is there really a God orchestrating all things? Or is it all just chance? Is it chance or is there a dance going on? And he makes this comment, if everything is chance, then nothing means anything. If everything is chance, then nothing means anything. But if everything is deliberate, then everything means everything. Try and get your head around that statement. If there is no designer and no design, then nothing means anything. It's just an accident. But if there is a designer and if there is a design, if, as Paul was putting forth, that he has allotted our times, he has caused you to be right here, right now, in this day and in this age, to the parents that you had and the country that you were born in, if he has decreed all of these things, or as Stuart quoted, he has knitted you together in the womb, and the first womb then carries into the second womb of the world, and he has caused you to be in the right place at the right time so that you can find him and find that he is actually not far from you. That in fact, you're not missing out on the good life, and you don't need a spiritual mobile phone to take you somewhere else to find it. It's right here, right now. Then everything means everything. Now, it might feel like a massive overstatement, You might prefer that he said something like everything means something. You know, at least all things have some meaning, but to take it to the extreme that everything means everything feels like an overstatement. And maybe he is. Maybe there's an element of hyperbole there, blowing it out and making a big statement to shock us and break us out of this mode of looking at the world as if things are essentially an accident, or they're only going to be good if we do the good ourselves rather than as according to God's plan. I think at least part of what Howard is getting at here, which is important for us, is that in an intricate design, in a plan such as this, all things play a crucial part in that drama. No matter how small, insignificant a thing may appear, its purpose is as important as anything that may seem grand or playing out on the global scale. Indeed, we might think that Scripture says, look for the insignificant. That's probably where God is working. Don't look to the kings and to the nations. Look instead to a forgotten couple who are going to give birth to the King of Kings. While the kings of the world miss it, a few wise men waiting, poised, looking, seeking, find the star. Some shepherds are arrested from their daily boring labors to seek out the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. While grand things are going on in this world of theirs, the grandest thing was happening in the most insignificant, tiny little place called Bethlehem. And most people missed it. If we take this idea a little further, if everything means everything, then a little is enough. More than enough. You do not need to accumulate friends on Facebook to have a great experience of friendships. A few friends will likely prove more than enough for you. The belief currently being pursued that we need more of anything and more of everything, that we need to move faster to keep up, otherwise we're missing out, is a massive lie, a deception, and it's causing us to look in the absolute wrong direction for the life that God is calling into being. If you are God, you can do all things. You can be in all places. You have life in you to the maximal capacity to which life can be there. You can widen your experience and never cheapen it. It will always be as deep as possible. You can go wide and deep if you are God. But we're not God. And that's okay, because if we understand what has been encouraged here, depth does not require width. You do not need to experience all things to have deep experiences in things. Quite the opposite, in fact. The trick or struggle for us limited finite humans is that to experience more, we actually need to go via the path of less. If we want more of an experience of our friendships, we need to find a few and go deep with them. If we want to experience more of anything in life, it's not about accumulation, it's about delving deep into it. And this is going to be a difficult thing to do. It's intriguing to me, actually, that, and surely no coincidence, when Paul, in writing to the church in Ephesus, he commends to them putting on the armor of God, right? There is a war going on. And this is very Revelation scenario, scene setting here. There is a war going on. And he commends to them the armor of God. And he says this. Finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, having done all to stand firm. Stand therefore, and he goes on and lists the armor of God. Sounds very similar to stand firm for the Lord, like a pillar in his temple. Different context, more of a military context. And yet when Paul comes to talk about it, he's saying essentially the same thing. What we need is God's help to stand and stand up and stand straight and stay standing. What we need is God's help to resist our restlessness, to find a path through this restless life and our restless hearts. What we need is God's help to stand firm. I wonder, in fact, whether he has, as that military image, has in mind the Roman army, which was famous for its discipline and would form had these clever formations, one of them the box formation, where the soldiers would stand side by side facing the enemy with these rectangular shields. They would lock them together and they would wait for the hordes to come tearing at them. And they would stand braced side by side holding these shields to withstand the initial impact of those enemies. And then with the enemies all fouled up and bound up and pressed up against the shields, would then use their short swords and just stab. As long as they held that shield wall side by side, they were impregnable and unbeatable. They would beat armies 10 times their size. And of course, all it takes is that shield wall to break and someone to get in behind, and the unprotected back of that wall now makes them extremely vulnerable, but provided they held that shield wall and stood together, provided they realized what they had to do was stand in the day of evil, they would prevail. Imagine then in the middle of the battle someone saying, "Oh, I've got a phone call. Someone's just texted me. Oh, someone sent me a great link. This is a funny video. Let's have a look at this." Yes, they did. You are very much like a Roman soldier, Dad. Yeah, you are ancient and outdated. See, standing shoulder to shoulder, taking the blows. That's good. That's how you do it too. The church really does need pillars, doesn't it? It needs pillars in the household. It needs people who clearly see the need to stand and resist the shifting mood of modern society, the mobile restlessness. No. We need people who have that vision, don't we? Who can pledge again and again that deep allegiance to Christ and in a real and specific way. I pledge myself to you, Lord, but there's no concrete manifestation of that, no actual outworking of that. It needs to be rooted in a real thing with real people. Even if it means foregoing what are genuine pleasures available to us in this world. Not only does the church need such people, but God is in fact building his kingdom with such people. And I wanted to finish with this. It's an image that came as part of our prayer time, 10 days of prayer earlier in the year, and we were praying about how, what would the Lord be saying to us about our place and our role in this community? And that image of the helium-filled balloon came. And as we all know, helium is lighter than air, so it rises. We also know that that helium-filled balloon, if you grab one, it's tight, isn't it? It's filled. It's just, you couldn't put too much more in without the rubber bursting. But the image was not entirely positive. It was really an image of modern society, of people in our community who are filled to the bursting in their life, who know great pressure in their life, who are under great stress and strain, and who, like a helium-filled balloon, just want to escape if they can and rise into the air and get away from it all. And yet, helium is an inert gas. It's nothing. It's a life filled to the absolute stretching point, breaking point, with emptiness, drifting unattached into the air, eventually lost to all sight. That was the image, one of the images we had in the prayer time. And attached to that image was a text out of Ephesians as well, which I will read. And picture an anchor to which the helium balloon's string is tied to prevent it floating away. Oh, goodness me. Why does my Bible app want to ask questions? Shut up. He has this prayer. For this reason, I bow my knees before the Father. And you'll be familiar again with the language that he uses. From whom every family in heaven and on earth is named. And the personal and specific nature of that. That according to the riches of his glory, he may grant you to be strengthened with power through his Spirit in your inner being. So that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. Listen to this, that you, being rooted and grounded in love, may have strength to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and length and height and depth, and to know the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled with all the fullness of God. And it was like the Lord was saying, in this world where people are stretched to capacity, who feel like they cannot do any more, who just want to escape, I need an anchor. I need people who will be grounded and rooted, not just individuals, a community grounded and rooted that they can rely on, they can come back to, they can find safe haven for. They can, when they come to the point of no return, they can ask, is there a better way? And they might find some pillars, some people grounded and rooted in love who can find them, show them a better way. That's a high calling, to stand, to stay standing, and still be standing when people come looking. Got a couple of minutes. Would anyone like to reflect back? Yes. Yes. Yeah. The folly of, Ecclesiastes, the folly of chasing everything. So the picture of the pillars of Joshua and Boaz, the pillars that didn't actually necessarily hold anything up but reached to the heavens for counsel. Yeah, good, thank you. No one else? Stunned silence.